Thanks for joining us on KPUPLP Patagonia 100.5 FM Art News Radio. I'm Julie Holding, your host today. After this week of hearings on President Obama's nomination of Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court and the news of her expected confirmation as our country's first Latina Supreme Court Justice, it seems very appropriate to focus on excellence within our local legal system. With us today is Judge Mary Helen Maley. Judge Maley currently serves as Santa Cruz County Justice of the Peace, an elected position she has held since 1993. Prior to that, she had her own law firm in Nogales, and during that time, she served as town prosecutor for the town of Patagonia, as well as city attorney in Nogales. But perhaps she is best known as co-founder of Circles of Peace. Circles of Peace, based in Nogales, is the first court-referred domestic violence treatment program to use a restorative justice circle approach. Circle of Peace received national recognition in 2008 when it was named one of the top 50 innovations in government. This is nationwide, by the Ash Institute at Harvard University's Kennedy School. Judge Maley, it is an honor to have you with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Julie.
You have some inspiring stories of change to share with us today, but let's start with the basics. What is the Justice of the Peace Court?
Well, the Justice of the Peace Court is the first level county court in a state system. The county courts are administered through the state, and it's a limited jurisdiction court. We have jurisdiction up to $10,000 in civil cases. All criminal cases start in the justice court. We don't have a grand jury in Santa Cruz County, and we handle those through the initial appearance and until the preliminary hearing, when it's determined if there's enough probable cause to hold the person to answer to the crime in Superior Court. We also hold small claims cases, which are disputes involving amounts not exceeding $2,500. We do landlord-tenant cases and all traffic cases, civil and criminal, and also emergency orders, orders of protection, and injunctions against harassment.
And what is the relationship between your court and Judge Barth's court?
They're exactly the same. Judge Barth is Justice Court number 2 in Santa Cruz County, and my court is number 1.
So is that a geographical division?
Yes.
So it depends on where the situation arose as to which court it would go to?
That's right.
Okay. And then are there jury trials in Justice Court?
Yes, okay. There are jury trials.
And what was it like for you as a judge? What was your experience like in Justice Court before Circles of Peace?
Well, I'm going to address the area of domestic violence because that's how the Circles of Peace fit into the court. And before the Circles of Peace program, I was very frustrated with seeing a lot of the same people being rearrested for crimes of domestic violence. Maybe they had new partners, but they were doing the same behaviors. And so I wanted to do something. I just thought there should be something different. We had one treatment program which was called a batterer intervention program in the county, and in that program the batterers are put into a group together and the victims are not allowed to participate, family members are not allowed to participate. So I kept thinking there must be some other approach that could be used, and finally I discovered the idea of the Circles of Peace through a book I read.
Okay, now let's just focus a little bit more on domestic violence. What is domestic violence?
Well, domestic violence is any kind of a crime such as assault, disorderly conduct, criminal damage, threatening and intimidating between intimate partners or family members. It could be husband and wife and husband, brother and sister, mother and daughter, father and son, sometimes elderly, the grandparents are the ones who are abused. So it's in a family situation.
And how often does domestic violence run in families through generations?
Well, the research shows that that is very common, that domestic violence reoccurs in families because the current perpetrators have been abused as children.
And how often are women found to be perpetrators?
Well, this is an interesting fact, and 30 years of research by Dr. Murray Strauss has shown that women are approximately 48% of the perpetrators, while men are 52%.
And how prevalent, is there any way of knowing, because I know domestic violence is often in very secret, but how prevalent do you think domestic violence is in Santa Cruz County?
I think there's a high percentage of it throughout all socioeconomic levels, all types of families. I think it's very prevalent. I think the violence in our society permeates families.
And you would know that being a judge and seeing that in the courtroom.
I do.
So when do police and the courts get involved to stop domestic violence?
Well, it's usually a call, a 911 call, that's made sometimes by the child in the home or by a neighbor who hears the event occurring. And then the police are called and somebody has to be arrested at that point. And sometimes the lines are kind of blurry as to who's the aggressor and who isn't, but somebody gets arrested. Usually somebody gets arrested when the police are called, always somebody gets arrested. There's a mandatory arrest policy in Arizona.
Okay, and so then at that stage, what was happening prior to Circles of Peace is that the person who got arrested would come to your court, and then what would happen?
Well, usually they enter into a plea agreement with the prosecutor. Many times it's called a diversion plea, where they admit their guilt, but the judge does not accept the plea. Then the person has to pay a fine, maybe do community service, and then under state laws, they have to go to 26 weeks of domestic violence counseling. And then if it's a diversion case, upon completion of all that, the charges get dismissed. If they don't complete, then the charge is entered as a judgment of guilt against them.
Okay, and so then what was it about that system that caused you to want to look for something else?
Well, primarily the reoccurrence that I was seeing and the frequency of victims asking to participate and wanting their partners to go to counseling and to participate themselves sometimes. And so I felt like the system at the time did not permit that. In fact, it was absolutely forbidden for victims to participate. And so the way I saw it, and I never attended a class. I asked to one time, but I wasn't invited. But the way I saw it was that we had a lot of perpetrators together, and they were being, it's an education type system where they're told to change their sexist attitudes and beliefs. The prevailing theory was that it was men against women, that women should leave the men. And from my perspective, that wasn't what was happening, that people wanted to stay together, not always, and those people, they didn't stay together. They went on and got divorced. But many times they wanted to stay together. They just wanted the violence to stop. And so it made sense to me to look at the dynamic of abuse that was occurring within that family and try to address it from all sides.
So then what did you do? I mean, you had this situation that you weren't all that satisfied with, how it was going. And so what did you actually do to try to address it?
Well, first I just kept talking about it. And here's the first connection to Patagonia, of which there are many. Molly Webster finally said to me, well, would you just stop talking about it and do something? So I'm very grateful to Molly for pushing me. And so I went out and got some books. And the first book I read was by Dr. Linda Mills from New York University. And it was promoting the Circles of Peace idea within domestic violence. It was a restorative justice approach.
Now, what do you mean by restorative justice?
Well, restorative justice means you look at the whole situation and the first thing is to restore the victim. If there's been emotional damage, there's been monetary damage, there's been whatever damage has been done to the victim, that is looked at and determined how the restoration can occur for the victim. And then you also look at the perpetrator. How does he or she need to be restored? And then the community as well. The community is part of it because domestic violence affects the community. So it's a matter of restoring the people that were affected by the crime back to wholeness.
And how does domestic violence affect the community?
Well, the community is greatly affected by domestic violence. People don't come to work because they've had an incidence of domestic violence. Children don't perform in school because they're living with domestic violence between their parents or someone else in their family. And the people who are the victims, of course, are their lives can be devastated. And the people who are the perpetrators, their lives are damaged as well.
So, okay, so you read this book by Dr. Linda Mills, and so then what happened?
Well, I contacted her, and I asked her if she would come out to Santa Cruz County and help me start a program. And coincidentally, she had just convened what she called a summit in New York, where she gathered people from around the world, actually, to talk about how to bring restorative justice into the domestic violence area. So she was happy to hear from me, and she came out with some of her PhD people on her team. She runs what's called the Center on Violence and Recovery at New York University. And I gathered together about 45 people within the community that I knew were connected with domestic violence in some way. Judges, lawyers, victim advocates, agency providers, police officers, sheriff's deputies, probation officers. And we all met at the Rio Rico Resort, and we created our program with Linda's help.
And what year was that?
That was in 2004, okay. In May of 2004.
Okay, and what, you mentioned what restorative justice, the concepts of restorative justice, but what are the core values? What did she present that day that were the core values, and where does these new ideas come from?
Well, the wonderful thing about what she did was she just facilitated all of us to create the program and how we were going to design it. And the core values are that the perpetrator who's been accused of the crime is required to enter into a social compact with the agency, this counseling agency, in which he or she agrees that there will be no violence, often no alcohol, always no drugs, and many other things that might apply to that person. And then that perpetrator is required to designate a support person. It could be a family member, a friend, a coworker of that, someone like that, who will come to the circle with them. And then the victim is invited to participate, and it's totally voluntary on the victim's part. The victim can participate in person or in writing through a letter, or can send a support person or a designee for them to participate.
And but if the victim participates, can the victim also have a support person?
Yes, the victim has to have a support person as well. And then there are community members who have been trained in the process, and they come and they are supportive of the family. And so they meet in a circle, and there's a counselor who's called a circle keeper. And the first thing they do is they set the core values for the group, and the group sets what those are. So it's a consensus-based program.
Now, what do you mean by core values?
All right. They are usually things like truth, respect, trust, anything that the group comes up with. That what they are values that the group agrees to live by. When you come into Circle, it's a sacred place, and the group decides what the values are going to be. They're written down, usually on the back of paper plates, and put in the middle of the circle. Something sacred is put in the middle of the circle too. And then there's a talking piece, something that someone has that is meaningful to them. And when you have the talking piece, you have the pleasure of talking. And when you don't have the talking piece, you have the privilege of listening. So that's how they start. They create their core values and their guidelines. Guidelines are things like turn off your cell phones, start on time, take breaks, things like that. So everybody agrees to those by consensus.
Now, and how often do these groups meet?
They meet once a week for 26 weeks. Those are the state regulations.
Okay. Now, is there some kind of counselor or facilitator?
Yes, that person is called the circle keeper.
And what does the circle keeper do?
Well, the circle keeper monitors the group, makes sure that the social compact is talked about, and then there are certain key elements that have to be talked about under state law, such as the idea of power and control, how and the, how that plays a part in domestic violence, stress reduction. There are several mandatory things that they have to address. And then whatever is particularly appropriate to that circle. Many times it's hard to say exactly what it is because every circle is different and everybody has their own issues that are talked about. But the wisdom that comes from the circle is so amazing because all the participants have stories and the stories are relevant to what's going on in the lives of the people.
Now, are there any stories? I know that a lot of this must be confidential, but are there any stories that you can share with us that can help the listeners really understand the transformative power and that wisdom?
Well, yes. There's one involving a man who, well, everybody has to have an evaluation when they come into the circles. And often there are substance abuse issues, and those have to be addressed first. And they have counseling for that even before they start the circle or as they're attending circle. Sometimes they are required to go to AA meetings and so forth.
AA meaning?
The Alcoholics Anonymous, yeah. But in this particular case, the man did not present with any kind of a substance abuse problem. So they met each week. His wife wanted to participate.
Now, was the man the abuser?
The man was the abuser. Okay. And the wife wanted to participate, but he was very obnoxious toward her. She would come to the circle, and first she would ask him, "Do you want me to go?" And he'd say, "Oh, I don't care what you do." And then she'd come and be in the parking lot, and the circle keeper would kind of have to coax her in. Well, fine. Then he was abusive toward this community members. He would say
verbally.
Things. Verbally, yeah, mm-hmm. Just not very nice to them. And so finally, as a group, they realized that he had an alcohol problem. And so then through the process of consensus, they agreed that he had to be sent back to the court.
And he agreed too?
And he agreed too, right. And so he came back and he said, "I know I have to go and get some substance abuse, but I'm having trouble because they want me to go to AA, they want me to go to that, and I can't keep everything straight. So I happen to have one of those little calendars that they send you from Office Max or Office Depot." And so I said, "Well, here, why don't you take this and write all your appointments in there?" So he went through his substance abuse treatment, and then he got back into circle, and his next review, he came back. I have reviews on the cases.
So that's in court.
Yes.
So that's periodically during the 26 meetings.
Yes.
Then the perpetrator has to come back to the court and have a review.
Right. Okay. And the reason for that is that the research shows that the attention of the judge is very important in the healing process. And I have found that it's important for me to understand people and what's going on in their lives. And it's critical because often they drop out, not because they don't want to go, but because they don't have the money to pay or they're having other issues in their lives. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this man came back and then he was so proud of himself. And he said, "Look, Judge," and he showed me his diary, the calendar that I had given him. And he had his AA meetings down, his substance abuse meeting, his circles down. And he showed it proudly in circle too. And it was a real transformation within the family. And at the end of the 26 weeks, the wife and husband both said, "Do we really have to quit now? Can't we come back for some sort of alumni circle?" So that was one great story.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And so then has that family managed to stay out of the court system since then?
Yes, they have.
That's a wonderful success story. Yeah. And were their children involved in that?
They
situation?
Were an older couple.
Oh.
So
mm-hmm.
I didn't know if they had children, they were grown. And I didn't know about that. They weren't part of it.
Okay.
I want to just read this quote.
Okay.
There's an article in the Review of Law and Social Change that I wrote with Dr. Mills. And this sort of is important in terms of understanding the circle. And at the core of circle work is the belief that human beings want to be positively connected to others, share core values that indicate what that connection means, and often bury their core values beneath the pain of adverse life experiences. Circles are safe spaces where participants can rediscover both their core values and their desire to be positively connected to others. And this is so important. When we started the program, we were having trouble getting community members and
to participate.
To participate. And so we toyed with the idea of having a stipend for being a participant. And our teacher, Kay Prannis from Minnesota, who taught us the circle method, said, absolutely not. You should not pay. This is the volunteer aspect is very important. And she was so right, because people become so close to their community members and their support people, of course. And they say things to me in court like, wow, I just can't believe that these people are giving their time to help me and my family. Mm. So it's really a core part of the program. Mm-hmm. And the people who participate are transformed as well. I've been a community member myself, and it's just a transformative experience. It's hard to describe unless you do it, but you can imagine that if you put yourself there, it's confidentiality. There's another core value. So you put yourself in a safe space where you know everything's confidential, and you tell your story, and in a way that, or on a subject that might help what the problem is that's presented in that circle that day or that week. And you learn things. I mean, I have been helped through the circle mm-hmm. process myself. And everybody who went through the original trainings said the same thing. And we have such a wonderful core group of community members now. We even have volunteer circle sort of get-togethers where they come and they share stories, and they are so committed, and they do circle after circle. You know, they might mm-hmm. take a break, mm-hmm. but they love it, because it's a wonderful way to give back to mm-hmm. your community.
And are there Patagonia people who are community members in circles?
Yes. Bernice Pomeroy and Janet Wyans currently are in a circle that we're conducting here in Patagonia. And it's interesting, another Patagonia connection is that at the same time that Linda Mills helped us design the criminal justice method, which we're doing through the court, she also designed a community circle program. And Catherine Twinfeathers started that program here in Patagonia.
And Catherine lived here for a number of years and moved recently, but yes. She was a Patagonia resident for a while.
Yes, and several community members here in Patagonia participated in that group, and it was a wonderful group. And now this group that's going on now has come, some of the people who mm. were trained there have come in. And Catherine is in Tucson now and contacted me just recently and is working with a peace group there in Tucson, and they're going to be coming down to Patagonia to see what we're doing and talk to us about it.
So. Now, I understand that the concept of restorative justice has roots in a variety of cultures. And I think it's so interesting that those roots have been pulled together to be used in the context of our court system to address domestic violence. Can you talk about those roots?
Yes, well, in indigenous peoples throughout the world have used this method. The Native American Indians, you think of the elders and the peace pipe, and that the circle method was used to handle community problems. And in South Africa, after the apartheid, it was used extensively to bring about healing. The perpetrators were brought into the circle, and the victims, or if the victims had been killed, then their family were there. And the circle method was used to decide what kind of reparations would be made. Many times they didn't want the perpetrators to be sent to jail, because then they couldn't work and earn money to restore the victims to their pre-crime position.
And so did it, the concept of restorative justice arise out of the communities there in South Africa, or did they adopt it from the North American Indians, Native Americans?
I don't know the answer to that. That's an interesting question, but I think that it's throughout the world. And the interesting thing about our program is that it wasn't in the domestic violence area, that there was resistance to that when restorative justice was moving throughout many other types of situations. And so I'm happy that we have it now in the domestic violence area, because I think it's unrealistic to think that everybody wants to separate, everybody wants to divorce. And certainly there are cases where that has to happen. But in the cases where people want to stay together and they want to live harmoniously, it's a wonderful method to use to help people reflect and look at their situations and what's going on and how to correct those things. And I often say to people in court, well, I know that you don't want your children to grow up and either marry a perpetrator or become a perpetrator. So it's really time to address what's going on in your family, because the research shows that if you don't, that is what's going to happen to your child. And everybody really understands that, and they perk up and they take notice.
Mm. Well, tell us another story. You mentioned a young man who had many warrants.
Yes, this young man, it was a great story. He assaulted his girlfriend and was arrested and came into court and was placed in the Circles of Peace program. And I had issued 7 warrants throughout the course of his time with me. But in the beginning, the warrant was for, he just didn't go get his evaluation.
Okay. We should probably say, what is a warrant?
Well, a warrant is issued if you fail to appear in court or you fail to obey a court order.
And so warrants are a warrant for arrest?
Yes.
Is that what that is?
A warrant for arrest. And they're not issued lightly. I mean, letters are sent, phone calls are made before they're issued. It's like the last resort. And so he first got his warrant, I think, for failing to show up at the agency for his evaluation. Finally, we got him in there. He took his girlfriend, participated somewhat, and then he had trouble with a support person. Finally, he got his father, and his father agreed to be his support person. So they went for a couple months, and everything was great, and then he dropped out. And so I would call, I would send letters, and then finally have to issue another warrant. Finally, we got him through the program, but after a couple of times where he had to get arrested, and each time his father would come to court and sit there and support him, and I'd say, now, are you going to get him finished? And he'd say, yes, Judge, I promise we're going to get finished. So he finally got finished, and then he didn't finish his payment, so he couldn't get his certificate to bring to court to get his case dismissed. So I called the number that he had given me, and it turned out it was his father's cell phone, and the father answered and said, well, I'm in the hospital, Judge. I'm having a little heart trouble. And I said, oh, I'm sorry to bother you. This is the number your son gave me. So he passed me to the mother. We'll take care of it, we promise. So he still didn't come to court. And then through the grapevine in Nogales, I found that the father had died. And so I gave him another several weeks to comply, still didn't comply. Finally, had to issue another warrant. He got arrested, and the mother came in and posted the bond for him. She said, I've collected this money from my friends, and we're going to let it be used to pay what he owes. We want him to get his certificate. So I said, great. He came up to the bench, and I explained what was happening. And some other horrific things had happened within the family. One nephew of his had committed suicide. One had been killed in a drive-by shooting. I mean, these kinds of things that that you learn about people and you understand what's going on, it's very devastating. But anyway, he's standing before the bench. I said, look, we have it all settled now, and we're going to get you your certificate. Just take this, your mom's agreed. And he burst into tears. And I said, oh, I'm really sorry about your father. You have my sympathy. And he said, no, Judge, I want to thank you. I just want to thank you that I had all those months to sit with my father in a circle every week. We had never done that in my whole life, and we talked man to man every week. So by then, I and my clerk and the mother and everybody was in tears. But it was a very, very wonderful story of healing, even though there were a lot of sadnesses along the way.
Yes. And has he stayed away from
he has not been arrested.
The court since then?
Yes.
That's great. That is really great. So you've mentioned that you had learned or have learned a lot personally by being involved with the Circles of Peace program. And would you care to share any of that?
To be honest, I was ready to quit my job before I started this program. I was just tired of a lot of dysfunctionality and sadnesses. And it was just, I wondered, asking myself, what was I doing? Why wasn't I out, making the big bucks as a lawyer? And I started this program, and I realized that there really is a way to help people in this area, and that this method works. And Final story was a young man who has on probation, and he had to get a letter from his for his probation officer. So he came in, and the executive director said, "Well, just have a seat over there. I'll type up your letter." And he said to her, her name is Juanita. He said, "Yo, Juanita, you know, me and my wife are getting along so good. This stuff really works." So it has worked for me as well as a judge. I go to work with a much better attitude. I use the circle process with my staff in staff meetings. There are just endless possibilities for the use of this type of method because it's so respectful, so caring, it's safe, and everybody gets to speak their piece, even the people who might not speak up in other situations.
If listeners would like more information or are interested in helping by being a community volunteer in a circle, what should they do?
Well, they should call the Circles of Peace office, Juanita Molina or Judy Lopez, who's the community coordinator, and the number is 281-0956. There's also a website at www.circlesofpeace.us.
All right. And is there anything else that we didn't cover today that you'd like to share with us before we close?
Well, I just hope that some of your listeners will consider becoming community members. It's a very rewarding experience. The office is in Nogales at the, it's in the little Mastic Plaza there where the windmill is on Grand Avenue, where the Samurai restaurant, it used to be a furniture store. And as you turn in there, you'll see the Circles of Peace. It's on there. And I just hope that some of your listeners will feel that this might be a good way to give back. We're hoping to bring the circle process into Patagonia and in other ways too. And I just find that it's a wonderful way for people to get to know themselves and also to do something meaningful.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having
me today.
Thanks for having me.
Many thanks to Casina and K-Pup for support for the show. And thank you for listening to K-Pup 100.5 FM. My co-host Charlotte Lowe will be back next week.